Glenn Kimble, always a great guest, isn't he? All right, we're going to have open lines for you this hour. Plus, I'm going to open up the special topic line, the undead line, for those of you who have witnessed those who are undead, that beings that just seem to come in and out of your life and they disappear. 818-817-0021. Of course, I want the story behind it, too. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, this hour's going to fly by. I kind of like flipping this format every once in a while. Not all the time, but just every once in a while. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Brandon.
Hey, Brandon, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Houston.
Well, welcome to the show. Houston, March 2nd, I'm going to be out there, by the way, so come on by and see me.
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. What will that be at?
It's going to be at a convention center out that way or amphitheater, and all you got to do is come on out. I think they're charging a fee for it. I don't get it, nor would I charge one. But
okay, well, I'll definitely investigate.
Our radio station, KTRH, has it going. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I called in. I just wanted to relay a strange story of something that happened to me when I was younger. Okay. I was in seventh grade, and my mom got transferred to Alabama, and I just lived there for 1 year. And while we were there, I used to skateboard, and there was a concrete ditch there, and I used to go there with my friends. And we were skating there one day, and we decided to follow the ditch and see where it led. And so we just started walking and walking, going down the ditch until it went further and further away from the neighborhoods and where anyone was, and just went sort of into the woods, you know.
Yeah.
And it went for miles and miles. I don't know why, just to explore, I guess. And when we finally got to the end, it just ended by going into a hill with just a big hole, you know, sort of going into a hill way out in the woods. And so we were standing there, me and my friend, sort of contemplating if we should go inside or not. And and then we heard people speaking to us from inside of this pitch black tunnel in the middle of nowhere, and they were asking us to come inside, and we were I personally was petrified. I was just scared stiff, and I couldn't do anything, and I'm assuming my friend was also. So we just stood there, and then I heard this instrument playing. And then this is the weirdest part, and it happened such a long time ago that I almost don't believe my own memory, but there were luminescent eyes inside of the tunnel.
Oh.
And then we stood there watching. Hmm. And then they actually came out of the tunnel, and it was a family, a dad and a mom and three little kids. They were all blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and they were all on bicycles. This makes no sense. I know it sounds absurd, but this
and
was
they
what
look
happened.
And they look human, right?
They looked completely human, and they looked a little. I remember looking at the little kids because I was in shock, and the littlest. I'd say the children range from the littlest one being maybe 7 years old to the oldest one being maybe 12, and their eyes were kind of sunken in a little bit, but they looked completely human. But I just remember noticing that, you know, like a little like dark circles around their eyes.
They were hybrids.
I have no idea what they were, but they came out of this pitch black tunnel in the middle of nowhere, and then they rode away on bicycles. And the story is completely absurd. And I thought this would be the place to tell this story because it doesn't fit into any context of anything I can think of.
That is bizarre. And the ditch, was the ditch man-made and then eventually it became natural?
No, it was man-made, and it was really big. And that's why I used to go skate on it. And as you followed it into the forest, it became smaller and smaller. And then the actual concrete part of the ditch was small, and then the grass part went up high. So the actual man-made part, I guess, got smaller as you went through. Until finally there was just a circular tunnel that just went into it. And actually, a long time afterwards, we kind of got up our courage and we decided to go inside. And we didn't find anything when we went inside. But it
so
was
you
a
didn't
long,
find
it was,
you
it
didn't
was
find
many
the homes
weeks later.
Okay, so the homes of the hybrids, they weren't there. All right, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go to the undead line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, this is Michael Vannebosch from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hey, Michael, what do you got for us?
And I can't believe I'm on your show. God bless.
Yes, sir, you've done it.
Anyway, I have a story about the undead. I used to go to this place called the Towers. We called it this place in Indianapolis where I guess a bunch of people died in a building accident. And we used to go there and we used to see all kinds of weird stuff like devil worship handwriting on the walls and all kind of stuff like that. And anyway, I went back home and I started praying a lot. And, you know, because I'm a Christian, I prayed a lot. And there appeared before me like this being that had blue, ocean blue eyes. And he said to me, "You're going about it all the wrong way." And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "There are more than, you know, just one God." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he's a very beautiful creature. And all of a sudden, I remember that scripture. It said that anything that comes to you that's an angel that says anything other than this gospel, it's one of the Pauline epistles, you know, shunned. So I said, "Get away from me in the name of Jesus." And all of a sudden, this form began to manifest into something ugly and disgusting.
Oh, he shapeshifted back into a demon.
Yeah, and just like disappeared.
He was a deceiver.
Yeah, he was. And I was scared and I was trembling. And but then again, I was confident because I was sure that the Lord would protect me. But anyway, that's my story about the undead. He had ocean blue eyes like those other guys said, but I'm not saying they all, you know, that have ocean are bad, or, you know, some may be bad, some may be good. I don't know.
He knew how to trick you to get in the door, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
but he said, you know, they come as angels, angels of light. They can come and appear as angels of light. So you never know.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're smart enough to get rid of him. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, George.
Hi.
My name is Ed, and I'm calling from Peoria, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, Ed. Hi.
I wanted to let you know I'm able to talk to spirits and ghosts.
How long you been able to do that, Ed?
Since I was about 6.
How old are you now?
I'm 25.
All right, you're 25 years old. You talk to spirits and ghosts. Now, you talk to them with telepathy, or you talk to them with your own voice?
No, I just sit down and I talk to them. Well, when I was about 6 or 7, at the old house that I used to live in, there was a family that had passed away. Their youngest daughter passed away of polio, because at the time they had no cure for it.
Right.
And stuff. And I did not know about the girl passed away. I didn't know about the family passed away in the house. So one day I went from my kitchen, because my kitchen, off of my kitchen was my bedroom and the bathroom.
Okay.
Well, I went from the kitchen to the bathroom one day, and I looked. Something happened to catch my eye in the bedroom, in my bedroom, sitting on my bed, and nobody was there. So I went ahead and I looked, and I saw this figure in nothing but white. So I went over there, and I saw that there was a little girl sitting there. Now, I don't have no sisters. I have no brothers.
Did it look like it was a human being?
Yeah, it did.
You're thinking, how'd this little girl get in here?
Yeah, it looked like, well, I sat down, and I'm like, "How did you get here?" She goes, "I live here." I'm like, "No, you don't. I do." She goes, "No, I live here." She goes, "I'm looking for my mom and dad." I'm like, "How can this be? My mom is the only one that lives here."
So you weren't aware at the time then, Ed, that she was dead, right?
No.
That she was, okay.
No, she just looked like she was a human and stuff. And I'm like, "How did you get in here? Which window did you break?"
What'd she say?
She said, "I broke no window. I live here. You just haven't been able to see me lately." So I went ahead and I asked her, "Well, what makes you think you live here?" She goes, "Well, this was where my bed was." I go, "Well, how long did you live here?" She goes, "For a long time." I go, "What year?" She goes, "Well, isn't this 1786?
Oh, my.
I looked at her, and I'm just like, "No." She goes, "What year is this?" I go, "I believed it was like 1996, 1993, somewhere around there and stuff." And I'm like, "This ain't the year that you say it is." So I went ahead, and later on, I was afraid to tell my mom because I thought she'd think that I was psycho. So finally, I sat my mom down and I told her, Mom, I just saw a little girl in my room. She's like, well, what did she look like? I explained everything to her, what the girl looked like. She goes, and she just stopped, and her jaw dropped, and I'm like, what's the matter? She goes, that is the same girl, same description of the girl that passed away here and stuff. And I guess my mom was in the kitchen one day when I wasn't home, and she felt somebody touch her shoulder. And I guess it was the old man that had passed away in the house.
Now, this is all from the 1700s. I mean, how did your mother know about that history?
Well, my mom looked it up in the computer when I started telling her about what I've seen.
What do you mean? She tracked the family somehow?
Yeah. Somehow she went onto the computer, because our library, you can trace your pretty
lineage.
Much
yeah.
Your neighborhood and stuff, and see who all lived there and stuff. And I went ahead and I went down the library with my mom, and I was checking out books. My mom was looking everything up, and she told me that there was a girl that passed away there with polio, and her dad had passed away with a heart attack. But I don't know anything else about her family.
And do you still communicate with them, Ed?
Well, I moved away and stuff, but the house that I'm in now, I see them constantly because of the simple fact where I live was built on top of a graveyard.
And do they talk to you freely all the time?
Well, they look, they notice me. They're shocked that I can see them because they're just going about their normal days. They don't think they're dead.
Why? Yeah, why don't they move on?
Because they're actually afraid to. Some of them are actually afraid to move on.
Do they talk to you about that?
Yeah, they ask, well, what will happen if I move on?
They ask you that?
Yeah. They ask me, what will happen if I move on? I tell them, you either go to a nice place or you go down where you have to serve your judgment.
They don't like to hear that part, do they?
No, they don't, but they don't know that they're dead. Some of them know, but some of them don't even have a clue.
Do any of them, Ed, ever try to hurt you, or are they evil?
No, I've ran into maybe three evil ones.
What are they trying to do?
They say, well, you're not supposed to see us. You're going to go to hell if you see us. And stuff. You're not supposed to have this power and stuff. And, well, one time I got into this argument with one of them, and they ripped my shirt.
You got into an argument? You sound so docile, Ed. You don't sound like you'd get into an argument.
No, I don't, but this one just kept saying, well, you're not supposed to see us. I go, I don't know how I got the gift to be able to see you.
Are you glad you have this gift, Ed?
In a way, I do, but in a way, I feel like I'm cursed.
I mean, do you see them all the time? You see them when you wake up? You see them when you're going to sleep?
Right now, I've pretty much, since I've been on the phone with you, seen about one or two of them pass by.
Well, they just walk by, they look at you, do they wave? What do they do?
Some of them wave. Some of them are just, like, leaving me alone. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you.
Do you see them when you go shopping and things like that, Ed?
Yeah, they pretty much live their normal lives.
They're not even dead. Do you sometimes see them, do they step out of the way of people in cars, or they just walk right through things?
Some of them walk right through because they don't even know that they're dead. But some of them know that they have passed on, and they just try to keep from letting people see them.
I mean, I hate to ask you this, Ed, but do you get any privacy from them? I mean, do you, like, what if you, you know, like, have to go into the bathroom or the restroom? I mean, do they show up there, too?
Yeah, I don't mind that they're around. I kind of like having company.
you got to have some privacy once in a while, Ed.
I talk to them once in a while. Well, when I'm getting over at my girlfriend's house is when they
That's when you kind of want some privacy.
Yeah. Well, I pretty much told them, if I'm somewhere where I want privacy, I'll tell you.
And they listen to you.
And they pretty much listen.
Well, what a gift. Well, you get on one of our other open lines, you got to summon a few up and have them talk through you so we can ask them questions about the afterlife. Can you do that for us one day?
Yeah, I can try.
Is there any of them next to you now?
Yeah, there's about two or three.
Well, see if you can get their attention, Ed, real fast. We only have a few minutes here.
Okay.
Tell me when they're ready to talk to us.
You they're all pretty much walking backwards.
So they don't want to talk?
One of them acts like they want to talk, but they're not too sure how they'll be responded.
Tell them they can be on a national radio show.
Some of them are just afraid to talk.
Well, the one who seems to be somewhat interested,
yeah,
ask him when he died, what year.
What year did you die?
What's he saying, Ed?
Hello, what year did you die? He said he died in 1500s.
1500s, so he doesn't even know what radio is.
No.
So that's not going to impress him.
No, he's trying to figure out what I'm doing right now. He doesn't even know that this is a phone.
Yeah, he's probably looking at you going, who's he talking to? What's he doing? Well, ask him, how did he die?
How did you die? He's saying something about his wife killing him.
His wife killed him?
Yeah. I guess he had an affair. Yeah, he's telling me he had an affair on his wife and his wife found out.
In the 1500s, they got angry then too, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well, tell him thanks and wish him well. Tell him to move on, Ed.
Well, when I do that, they kind of get upset that I'm telling them to move on.
All right, well, I've got to move on.
They mainly want their family members to pretty much tell them to move on.
Call in the next time you can get a ghost who wants to talk to us, Ed, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. Isn't that something? That was Ed. Well, we're going to continue. We've got the Undead Hotline. That's 818-817-0021. And then we've got the rest of your open line calls when I come right back. If you need to email me, let's make it simple for you. George@coasttocoastam.com. I'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, our next Coast to Coast program, you're going to love it. Apocalypse 2012, a scientific investigation into civilization's end with our guest Lawrence Joseph. Just a fascinating, fascinating series of research he has done. That'll be on our next Coast to Coast program. We'll be back in a moment. The Undead line is 818-817-0021. Well, let's get ready to go on our last segment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let's go back to the phone calls. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing there, George?
Great, great, great. Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm in Upper Sandusky, Ohio. I'm a truck driver.
I've been to Sandusky. They still have the amusement park out there, don't they?
You know what? It's across the street from the Pilot where I'm sitting.
How about that? Okay.
That's crazy. Well, I don't know. First time I've been through here. You know, about 2 weeks ago, you had a guy on there, and he was talking about space travel and whether or not the human body could withstand going into outer space, you know, for, you know, extended periods of time.
Right.
My dad used to work for a company called Rocketdyne. I don't know if you remember the company. They built, my dad's one of the 13 guys that built the J-2 engine that put Neil Armstrong on the moon.
Wow. Okay.
And there were 13 of them. They were sitting around two shifts. Six guys in the morning and seven guys at night. Well, they were messing around one time. They have a hyperbaric chamber that they would put things into to make sure that it could withstand the pressures of being in outer space.
Sure.
And they would try to simulate the pressure that they could build in, you know, with these engines and stuff. They had stuck a mouse in there one time, and it blew up. It imploded. Ugh. But they took a spider, and they stuck it in a cigarette cellophane, and they stuck it in there, and they did the same thing. And after, you know, running it in there for 20 or 30 minutes, they took it out. And when they put the spider back on the ground, and when it regained its shape, the spider picked up and started crawling off.
He lived?
Yeah, it didn't explode. It didn't do nothing. And that was like taking a spider and throwing it out into outer space without being in a spaceship or anything.
Was there breathable oxygen in there?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And they left it in there for like 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
This was This was back in, gosh, the 60s.
Oh, now we're going to find a planet full of spiders. That creeps me out.
Well, they did it on Earth. They did it in a simulated area.
You got your ghost
line going right now. I've got a story for you.
Undead. Go ahead.
This one is weird. I live in Wisconsin, and there's a town up there, Medford, Wisconsin. And there's a house up there. A bunch of us kids used to call it the Luther House. And back then, it was really messed up because we would go there and we would walk around, and all kinds of strange things would happen. I never saw anything personally, but I saw all kinds of weird things happening. Like, you could buy a brand new flashlight, take it into this house. It was an abandoned house, a farmhouse. You take a flashlight in there, a brand new flashlight, turn it on, it wouldn't work. Go outside the door, it works.
Yeah.
Come back in, it don't work. One day a friend of mine was with us, and he was standing. We looked down the hall, and we were up on the second story, and he was standing in the window getting ready to fall out this window. And we had got his attention, and he came back in, and we asked him what he was doing. And he said that there was a room in there, and it was filled with all the things that he had ever liked as a kid and as an adult. You know, I mean, the toys that he played with, all that stuff was in this room, but there was no room. It was just an open window that was, like, beckoning him to walk out.
Oh,
and we did a little research there, and what had happened was it was an Amish family that lived there, and the father had killed the family, burned the house, and hung himself in the barn, and took his youngest kid before he hung himself in the barn. He had his youngest boy was down in a well, like 15 feet down, and when they went out to put out the fire and all this stuff, they found this kid in the well, and the kid was still alive, and he was in the local, I don't know what you want to call it, the local sanitarium, but he was like 80-some, 90-some years old. But all kinds of weird stuff goes on there. They still got, you know, high school kids that go out there and check it out. It's still out there.
Yeah, you know, those houses are haunted for the rest of their existence, I think.
It's weird because if you go in there any other way, if you drive in there to go see this house, it's a succession of turns. You got to make, if you make like a left and a left and then a right, you won't get it.
No,
if you make a left, a left, and a left, you'll find it.
A lot of bad energy on that house. Hey, thanks for the calls.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, our next wild card line, you're on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
And wherever you may be, where are you?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Well, everybody's in Houston today. What's going on?
Well, you know, Houston's a pretty happening place these days.
That's what I hear. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there in less than
March 2nd.
Yep.
I have plans on being at the show, hopefully, and it should be a very interesting experience, I think.
It's going to be a tough, tight one for me because I'm there until 10 o'clock at night, and then I've got to rush off and do the show. So I've got a two-hour window to get ready to do that.
Oh, my goodness. That's quite a tight little squeeze there.
You got that right. So what's on your mind, Ms.
Houston? Well, a lot is on my mind. It just depends on the question to be asked, I guess.
You want me to ask you a question?
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
You want me to ask you a question?
Ask me a question.
Anything?
Anything.
How old are you?
I am 32.
How long have you listened to the program?
Off and on for about a year. I would guess religiously, well, not religiously, but steadfastly for the last 6 months.
Why? Stumped you there, didn't I?
No, I'm not stumped. You sound stumped.
No, why? Why do you listen?
I listen because I like to stay up late at night, and I like to have like-minded people who are thinking of the things that I'm thinking of and speaking of the things that I think, and it feels like we have a communal universe going on, and it's nice to be a part of it.
Do you run into people who listen to the program in Houston?
Yes.
Yeah, it is interesting when that happens.
Yes, it is.
Of everything you hear, what do you like the best? What kind of topics?
The healing topics.
Like the hands-on healing and energy healing, things like that?
Yeah, well, that's part of my work. That's what I do as a living. And So any type of healing energy, correcting the ills of the world, fixing the things that are wrong, and abolishing the things that are just not supposed to be there.
You're a healer?
Yes. Well, massage therapist is the official term.
Well, I guess you heal when you do that.
Yes,
I do.
In
many cases. I mean, there's nothing worse than achy bones.
You know, and achy bones and achy muscles, they lead to an achy brain and the achy breaky heart, to quote some corny country music song.
And how long have you been doing this?
Massage about 8 to 9 years.
So did you ever do a massage on someone who was so sweaty you didn't want them to even be around you?
No, because that does not even come into play when it comes into healing. Sweating is just a natural body process. And you gotta figure it, you know, you gotta look beyond the sweat and the hair and the fat. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, Miss Houston.
Every body is a human body.
Look us up when we're there March 2nd.
I'll look forward to seeing you.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I was able to interview you. Let's go next to our first time caller line here on Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. My name is Logan. I'm calling you from Kissimmee, Florida, but I'm a soldier of the 10th Mountain Division out of Fort Drum, New York, sir.
Well, hello, Logan, and thank you for serving.
Well, yeah, you're welcome, sir. But, sir, I started listening to you about a week ago, and I've been pretty much, I guess, a skeptic. And I grew up in a real Christian family, and some of the things that you have on, I mean, they're very interesting, but, I'm just torn whether or not I believe them.
Nothing wrong with being a skeptic.
Yes, sir. But I just want to tell you about something that happened to me, and I don't know, it never concerned me until I start listening to your show. My girlfriend, and it would be April the 10th, 1998, took me to have my fortune read, and there's a place here in Castleberry in Florida, and when we went in there, my girlfriend went first, and everything was fine. And they did her fortune, and it sounded all nice and dandy. But whenever it came to my turn, the lady, she started doing my cards, and I could tell that she was starting to get nervous. And I don't know why she would get nervous. I mean, but the card she was flipping over, I guess, had a lot to do with death and bad things. And I don't know if she was scared to tell me these things, but this was before 9/11. You could tell by my haircut I was in the military, so I figured death, you know, death stuff and all, you know, I'm in the military, she could figure that out. But so she went a little bit further and went to read my hand. I was born with a birthmark. It's on the inside of my right finger, on the left-hand side of my middle right finger.
All right.
I'm sorry, left hand, middle on the right-hand side of my left finger. Well, anyway, okay. It's a star, and it's a perfect 5-point star. It's a birthmark. But
that's
whenever
bizarre.
You read my palm and you flip it upside down, it's an upside-down star. Well, she grabbed my hand, and she almost was like she looked at it for like about 30 seconds and started getting panicky to the point of like she was just really nervous. And she looked at me, and she didn't say she didn't want to do my reading or that she couldn't do my reading. She looked at me and she said, "I can't help you." And that was it.
Did she look uncomfortable, Logan?
She looked very uncomfortable. And I mean, I didn't think I was putting off a vibe on how, you know, like I was going to punch her or something. I mean, I was just standing there letting her see my hand. And,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about that, but, I was injured in Afghanistan during Operation Anaconda. And anyway, my vehicle got hit. Well, this was later.
Landmine
negative. We got hit with an RPG, but this was later. We were actually high up in the mountains during Operation Anaconda. But I've had a few of my friends that have passed on and died that I was with them, and I guess I should have went too. And I lost a kidney, but that was kind of minor compared to the situation. And I tell you the truth, Mr. Norrie, I don't know what to think. I like I said, that I never really put anything to that with the
I'd like to talk to her,
Taylor.
Logan. I'd like to look her in the eyes and find out why she was so hesitant to continue with you, and what scared her. Something did. And
she wanted me out of her little shop. In a roundabout way, she just wanted me gone. And she didn't even take our money. I mean, my girlfriend went first, and she didn't even accept the money from us or for her reading. She just wanted me out of her shop.
And, you know, and just talking to you, you sound pleasant. I don't think you've got a lot of negativity around you. You don't seem like you have evil spirits possessing you. You know, there's something she sensed. So you, one, be careful. Who knows what it is? Whatever it is, she didn't want to tell you about.
No, sir. And that's what I didn't want to hear.
Yeah. So let me ask you a quick question. Where in the heck is Osama bin Laden?
Sir, are you sure we want to find him?
Well, you know, I thought for a while, Logan, we wanted to, but I'm not sure anymore. I'm not sure. What do the troops say? What do the troops say?
Sorry, you kind of put me on the spot there. But, you know, as far as the troops go, you don't really do it for the American way or what they want to say on the things. It's the guys that are to the left and to the right of you and your family back home, your friends back home.
First and foremost.
So if they say that we have a problem, I would rather me and my boys take care of it than somebody else's son. And that's the same way that all the boys in my unit feel. So if we have a job to do, we go take care of the job. You know, that's what we get paid to do, so that other people don't have to.
Yeah, no, and I understand that.
Maybe the mission, it was after 9/11, it was really dead on. We knew what was going on. We knew what we had to get done. Maybe the mission's changed. But the focus is still the same. And what you see and hear on the media, you would actually go there and have a young woman come up and hug you and beg you to take her child. And then they say that, I know a lot of people, they say that they don't want us there. The people, the Muslims, don't want us in their country. But whenever you have a woman trying to hand us their child or saying thank you and hugging on you, you can tell that you're doing some good. So that's all I need.
But let's find bin Laden, huh?
And I have a sneaky situation or suspicion that bin Laden's going to be the least of our problems.
What do you mean by that, Logan?
Well, we got Iran gearing up. North Korea looks like it might pan out. But if that blows up, it's going to be... I have a bad feeling. I don't know. I've talked to friends of mine that have passed on that it was weird because they were acting totally different the day that they died.
Almost like they felt something.
No, it was, like I said, the skeptic in me is just like sitting there saying, how could they? But then it would happen.
Are you
they
feeling
acted
something?
Weirder. They were nicer. They, you know, they started writing letters home to their families, you know, like last letters. And I knew that they were going out on a mission, but we go on missions every day. So it's not like, oh, this is going to be something different, but I guess they knew. And
are you feeling strange?
You know, I have, whenever I go out on a mission, it's kind of weird. Is I am not scared. And that's, it kind of worried me there for a little while because I don't know, because I've been in the military for 12 years, whether or not that kind of got, I've been to Somalia, I've been to Mogadishu, I've been to Haiti. I've kind of gotten a little bit, I guess, hardened to it. But, you know, I would be lying to you if I didn't say when bullets start flying, I didn't get worried. But I never had this feeling of, like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. I almost feel safe, and I don't understand why, but...
Do you think your
Ranger battle armor only protects you so much, but
well, that's true. Do you think? You know, I spent 9 years in the Navy, and I've never seen combat, so I didn't have to go through what you and your friends went through. Do you think bin Laden was a hired hitman, basically? that some group may have said, all right, you go and do this dirty deed for us?
Well, I know that we helped train bin Laden. I mean, whenever he had to deal with Russia or the Soviet Union during the invasion of Afghanistan, I mean, he was trained by us. A lot of the weapons that we are confiscating are, you know, U.S. military weapons.
How bizarre. So, it comes around to haunt us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and it's not the first time that's happened. But
all right, Logan, so we're out of time. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
All
right. That's a soldier. That's a soldier. Well, this wraps up our open lines. This hour just took off. Interesting format. I enjoy this every once in a while to do a flip-flop, to put the guest in the first hour. And I think that really helps those of you on the East Coast, especially with some of the fast blasts and emails I'm getting. We'll do that every once in a while, I promise. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Alan Corbett, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.